Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Welcome to the Here's the Catch podcast. This podcast is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together with the best of live and on demand. Learn more at DirecTV.com.
Let's go, man. Tear it up, dude.
You're listening to Here's the Catch with David Lombardi, Matt Barrows, and Dennis Brown on the Athletic Podcast Network.
On to week two. David Lombardi with you in California. So is Dennis Brown. Matt Barrows, he's on site with the 49ers over in West Virginia. They're practicing at the Greenbrier this week in between games at Detroit and Philadelphia. Matt, how's it going out there?
It's going well. I am really impressed by the Greenbrier. It's a huge, huge site facility. It's 11,000 acres, complete with two big grass practice fields, and then there's a turf field below it, and there's a whole practice center. So it's, you know, in some ways it's better than their digs in Santa Clara, which, as you guys know, those practice fields aren't even 100 yards long. So they have full fields here. They've got every amenity you could possibly imagine, and it's grass, and that's the magic word there. They used to spend their stayovers on the East Coast at Youngstown State, but they did not like the fields, the artificial fields there. And as we all know, and as fans painfully know, artificial fields, Dennis, have been the bane of this team. I'm just wondering whether you guys had the same issues, the same sort of dislike of fake grass when you were playing in the 90s.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, because back in the 90s, it wasn't as advanced as it is now. It was just basically concrete covered with some green grass. So, you know, the fake artificial turf. So it was a different turf. And, you know, I don't know if there were more injuries back then or than there are now, but I thought there was some great advancements with, you know, with this field turf stuff now, that it was actually supposed to prevent a lot of injuries. So I'm always surprised when I see guys, and I looked at, you know, the tape of last week and watching Verrett and how he tried to kind of get his balance, and his knee buckled once and then it buckled again, and I guess that was it. And it's just, you know, I thought it was enough give on this new AstroTurf that guys wouldn't get hurt. But that's not the case, at least not for the 49ers, because they seem to have a lot of issues when it comes to playing on turf. But I remember the Philadelphia turf way back when there was a seam right down the middle of the field, and it was notorious for guys blowing their knees out. But again, that was in the 90s when it was just basically artificial turf over concrete, and you were just basically playing on concrete. So it's interesting to me how especially the 49ers keep having all these freak injuries, and it's always on AstroTurf.
Yeah, it used to not look like grass. It used to actually look, and I guess it felt like concrete. And Maybe the injuries were different back then, because the problem now with this field turf is that it does have some give, but it also does have some grab. And they've done studies now. It's definitive at this point that there are more ACL tears on this new field turf than there are natural grass, which has more give, because obviously there can be a divot created if your foot gets stuck. So there's going to be some slide there. But in this new field, there's not as much slide. And who knows, maybe back in the day, Dennis, when you guys were playing and you're playing on that turf that, you know, really actually looked like concrete and probably felt like it, maybe there was more give than there is now. But that means that probably there were more concussions and bruises because you were literally falling down on something that was hard, right, back in the day. I remember you're talking about Veterans Stadium in Philadelphia. Yeah. That place was a dump, right? That was run down, but had a good atmosphere, I'm guessing, when you played there.
Yeah. You know, Philly fans remind me a lot of 49er fans because they're so passionate. And that's going to be one thing. That's going to be one of the big things come Sunday, if you can control that in the environment. I mean, and that's going to be on the defensive side, trying to shut down – this explosive offense that we saw last Sunday with the Eagles against the Falcons. So that's going to be another matchup that I'll be looking at if they can kind of control the environment a little bit.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to Mike McGlinchey today, and I asked him how often they went to a silent count in Detroit because they were preparing for that. They're playing in a dome, first game of the season, first game of the new coach's regime. He said only a few times, and on third down. They're playing outdoors in Philadelphia on Sunday, but McGlinchey, a Philly native, knows that crowd very well. Thinks that they're going to have to go silent count the whole game just because it, as Dennis says, it is a very passionate home base. There's not going to be certainly as many 49ers fans at that game as there were in Detroit, although there will be over 100 people in the McGlinchey party. His relatives, his friends will be there in the stands. I'm sure there'll be a lot of 49ers fans, but I bet a lot of his closest associates are still diehard Eagles fans too. So it's going to be.
Matt, did you say 100?
Yes, over 100. And here's something else, Dennis. He's ordering, once they get in to Philly on Saturday, he's ordering over 100 Philly cheesesteaks for the 49ers because he's so proud of Philadelphia and its famous eatery.
Well, John Taylor used to always, he was a Philly native, and Ricky Waters did the same thing. Every time we went to Philly, we would always get in our rooms when we landed Philly steak cheese sandwiches, and on the trip back, we always had Philly steak sandwiches. So, and I've never tasted one that's not even close to the original coming from Philly, anywhere close in San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, they have a rivalry there, right? Geno's and Pat's in Philly. Those are the two that are across the street from each other. And then there are a couple more that aren't as touristy that actual natives swear by. So Mike McGlinchey didn't have a chance to do this in 2017 because he wasn't with the 49ers yet. That was their last visit to Philadelphia. Speaking of the flight back, when I was on my flight back from Philly in 2017, that's when the 49ers traded with the New England Patriots for Jimmy Garoppolo. So people often forget about that Eagles game because it all turned into a flurry right after that. Garoppolo came over. It was his birthday, I think, a day or two after that. He sat on the bench for three games, and then he started five, and the 49ers won those five to close 2017. And then they drafted Mike McGlinchey, the Philly native, in 2018. So now the 49ers make their return to the site of what was just a grisly scene, Matt, in 2017.
Yeah.
I still consider that the nadir of the Kyle Shanahan era. It was pouring rain. The 49ers had almost no healthy offensive linemen. It was really bad. Guys were just running on fumes. C.J. Beathard started the game. Joe Staley was knocked out of it when he fractured his orbital bone right underneath his eye. And it looked to be very close to a situation where the 49ers were going to have to play Garrett Celek, a tight end, at right tackle. They were seconds away from having to do that, but I think it was Brandon Fusco, the offensive lineman who was down and hurt, got back up and was able to keep on playing. But needless to say, C.J. Beathard got hit, and he got hit a lot, and the 49ers got beaten by a lot by the eventual Super Bowl champion Eagles.
My flight back from Philly story is that, of course, we fly commercially, whereas the team takes a private charter out from wherever they're playing the night of the game. Well, on that commercial flight the next day, Monday, was Joe Staley. He was flying with a couple of trainers. He had to spend the night. Remember in that game, he took an inadvertent fist to the face from Fletcher Cox, I believe it was, who's still playing, and it fractured his eye, as David just noted. And let's just say it was the friendliest I've ever seen Joe Staley. He was maybe took a couple of painkillers that morning, but it was you never see a member of the 49ers flying commercially, and he was because he had to spend the night in Philadelphia. So it was just a brutal, brutal game. I think one of the rare highlights was that Matt Breida was sort of his coming out party. He was an undrafted rookie that year and had a long touchdown, but that might have been the only highlight. Pierre Garçon got hit in the neck, and it seemed like a minor injury at first, and then they realized that a little nodule on his spine, right below his neck, got chipped off. I mean, it was just I hate to say it, it's sort of a sign of things to come for the Shanahan era 49ers, where they just had these weird freak injuries on the road. And it's going to be, Dennis, it's going to be a really interesting game, because last year, if you'll recall, the two 49ers offensive tackles struggled, and that includes Trent Williams, who never struggles. And he let up a sack, I think, to Josh Sweat. And Derek Barnett had a nice game for Philadelphia. Brandon Graham, who never seems to get old out there, he's always on that team, had another good game. It's a very different defensive front than the one that the 49ers just faced. Offensive line did really well, I thought, against Detroit. This one, Dennis, is a little bit different, and it might be a nice revenge or at least rebound game for those offensive tackles.
You know, and that's another key to this game is keeping Jimmy Garoppolo upright and protecting him. But you mentioned Fletcher Cox. He's been doing it for a long time, and he's a vet, and it's going to be a challenge for this offensive line. But I looked at him, like the tape from the Eagles or from the Lions game, and they look good. They impressed me. I mean, we saw Elijah Mitchell with over 100 yards. We saw Jimmy Garoppolo throwing the ball around over 300 yards. And it's going to be a challenge for them, because this is the Philadelphia is kind of a sneaky good football team. And, you know, they got some good guys on the defensive line, and they can still come off the ball and get after the pass rusher, and they defend the run really well. So the 49ers are going to have good games, offense and defensive line. The trenches are going to have to be dominated by both sides, on both sides of the ball, to have a successful game. Because, again, offensive line, the Philadelphia Eagles offensive line, they're good. The defensive line is good. So in the trenches is when the game's going to be won and lost, like always.
Yeah, let's look at that matchup first, 49ers offense against the Eagles defense, because this is where Philadelphia has kept it constant for years and years and years now. I mean, when Mike McGlinchey was growing up in high school in Philly, he was watching guys like Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham dominate for the Eagles, and they're still there. And Kyle Shanahan said Wednesday, this is one of the best defensive lines in football, and it seems like it's just stayed constant for 10 years. Last season, it gave the 49ers, again, all kinds of trouble. Obviously, it did in 2017, as the year the Eagles won the Super Bowl and the 49ers were very thinned out due to injury. Well, last year, the 49ers were two. They were in better shape than they were in 2017, but Garoppolo wasn't starting, and that was the game where Nick Mullins threw that pick six late, and the 49ers probably should have won because the Eagles' offense couldn't do much, but the 49ers' offense could do less against that Eagles' front. I remember Mike McGlinchey had a bad showing. He got beaten on the right tackle side there a couple times in that game in critical spots, and this is going to be a litmus test for the 49ers' offensive line, you know, with Graham, with Javon Hargrave, the defensive tackle. Fletcher Cox obviously plays on the inside. Derek Barnett. I mean, Ryan Kerrigan is now on this Philadelphia team. He's a second stringer. So is Josh Sweat, who was a high draft pick not that long ago. So, I mean, this is a deep, powerful defensive line. Really, in a way, it's a taste of the 49ers' own medicine for them, right? Because they go against that deep, powerful defensive line in practice. Well, now they're going to go against it in a game. And, Matt, we talk about Alex Mack. We talk about Mike McGlinchey's weight gain. We talk about Daniel Brunskill's improvement. And, obviously, Trent Williams and Laken Tomlinson on the left side. It's a good-looking 49ers offensive line, 1-5. But this is an early test to see what they're really made of.
Yeah, I thought every member of that group had a good game. Probably it was best from left to right. Trent Williams, outstanding. Laken Tomlinson was really good. Mack was really good. And the two right side guys delivered. I mean, that's where the touchdowns came from. Elijah Mitchell's long run was on the right side. McGlinchey had a pancake block. Brunskill had a really nice block. I think George Kittle took out two guys on that play. Charlie Warner was out there. It was just really well executed. And, you know, you can say that the Lions aren't that great. Their defense struggled last year. They might not be any better this year. But when you're executing like that, you know, it just shows cohesion. And they have that this year. You know, I saw an end zone shot of that play right at the, you know, sort of moment of truth when Mitchell was hitting the line of scrimmage. Dennis, you could drive a horse and buggy through those holes. They were so big. And that's sort of what the 49ers are going to have to lean on this year. They don't have Raheem Mostert anymore. They're not going to have Jeff Wilson until the month of November. They need pretty anonymous running backs to shine, and the best way to do that is to block like crazy, like they did on Sunday. That just needs to happen throughout the season, and I think that they can get away with not having any sort of real marquee name, recognizable name, at running back this year.
Well, I'm curious, and you two are more in contact with the players, practices, and coaches, and press conferences. Trey Sherman, all accounts, I thought he was the number two running back. And last week, he was a healthy scratch. And, you know, I just wonder, is he one of these players that are in Shanahan's doghouse? Because he was the number two running back, I thought, you know, during training camp, the preseason. You know, he was injured a little bit. But now I look at it, and it looks like he's number three on the depth chart. So, I mean, what's going on with him?
Well, technically, he was even lower for the first game, right, since he was inactive and there were three guys ahead of him. So you could technically say he was number four. What I would say is I don't think that we have the full story publicly there, but I do know a component of it is this. Elijah Mitchell in college played literally in the 49ers offense at Louisiana. I mean, these guys even sent out analysts to study the 49ers outside zone run game, and Mitchell, one cut outside zone back that I think, you know, is a plug and play translation. Whereas Sermon in college, they did run a lot of outside zone at Ohio State, but they ran a mix of stuff, and he had to be a little bit more of a patient runner. And I know the 49ers for a fact are still trying to hammer in the one cut and go mentality in Trey Sermon. And he's going to have a chance to show it. Let me put that first in this game on Sunday, because now the 49ers have to play him. It's a situation where they've lost Raheem Mostert. They've lost Jeff Wilson. And yes, it is weird because Trey Sermon got most of that first and second team action. It did look like he was higher up in the pecking order during training camp. That's why I wouldn't rule out something else going down over the course of the week. But we know that's behind the 49ers now. And we know, Matt, that Trey is going to have to contribute now, because it's up to these young guys with both Mostert and Wilson unavailable.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, they drafted him in the third round, and it's the highest a running back's been drafted in the Shanahan era. So nothing, the way he runs and the offense that he ran in college, it isn't a surprise for them. So I agree with you. There's something going on there that we don't quite know about. I was looking at the pecking order in practice today. And remember, we're only there for the first 20 minutes, so we don't see a full practice. But what we see is the individual drills where, you know, the wide receivers do their drills and the running backs do their drills. And usually it follows the hierarchy. Raheem Mostert will take the first snap in any drill. And then, from May and through August, it was Trey Sermon getting the second one, and then it was then there was some variability after that among Wayne Gallman and Jermichael Hasty and Mitchell, and so that's where we thought that the real question mark was, which one of those guys makes the team, but Sermon seemed like a shoo-in to be the number two. So I certainly didn't have any foreknowledge of it, and I was very surprised when I heard that number 28 was down for the game. But like I said, during today's practice, Sermon was the number three back. I mean, that's where he was in the rotation. So I don't know what happened to knock him down to that point, Dennis. But I do know that Bobby Turner, the running backs coach, is very, very old school. So it doesn't even have to be anything with discipline, like missing a meeting or doing something with him. If you do something wrong, you're not minding your P's and Q's, you fall, especially as a rookie. So that may be behind it. Nobody has said anything. I asked the agent. He claims not to know why it was. But David's right. I mean, they're going to have to rely on him. You know, all of these guys, all, you know, during the offseason, we were talking about how deep that running back group was. They took two running backs in the draft. It seemed superfluous at that point. Now there's a real shortage of running backs, and they had to sign a guy today. And Trenton Cannon, I hadn't really ever heard of, but he's on the team, and I bet he gets in one of these games coming up because they're starting to get a little light at that position.
Well, you know, Matt, I think he does possibly play because the 49ers now have seven cornerbacks on the roster after they added Dre Kirkpatrick and they put Dante Johnson permanently on that 53-man roster. So they have seven instead of six, which means that one of those corners now definitely is going to be inactive, I think. I don't think you activate all of them. And that means they might be able to activate all four running backs because Cannon can return kicks. So maybe the 49ers aren't happy with Ambry Thomas returning kicks. I don't think he looked great. He didn't look good at all as a cornerback. So maybe Cannon comes up and starts returning kicks, and that way you have at least – one veteran running back dressed in this game, so you're not relying on all these, you know, rookies or, in Jamichael Hasty's case, a second year guy.
And that's going to be, you know, another matchup. You know, that secondary against Devontae Smith. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the game, but Devontae went off. You know,
yeah.
Six receptions, 71 yards, and he had one TD. But he looked like a Heisman Trophy winner. And now this, and I can guarantee you, you know, you're going to. You have two young corners there, and they're going to get attacked. They're going to be tested real quickly, and you know that's going to be something to watch. You know, and if the pass rush can't get on target early and kind of get Jalen Hurts kind of wrapped up, he's like a Russell Wilson guy. He's got a nice touch on that long ball, and he can get you with his legs. But that secondary is going to get tested real early.
Yeah, I mean, this defense as a whole is going to get tested because what the Eagles showed us against the Falcons was a really balanced offense. First of all, you had 173 rushing yards. Miles Sanders leading the way, but Jalen Hurts, their quarterback, is mobile. He could run too. 62 yards on only seven carries. And guys, what was really interesting to me is that Philadelphia and Hurts did not throw the ball far downfield on average. Jalen Hurts averaged 3.7 air yards an attempt, by far the lowest of any quarterback in the NFL. Second lowest was 4.2. So he's averaging only throwing it 3.5 to 4 yards down the line of scrimmage. And when I watch the tape of the game against the Falcons, it's just all about getting Jalen Reagor, Devontae Smith in space, and then it's all about hitting those tight ends. They have Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz still on the team, so it's all about getting them the football too, but mainly about getting athletes in space, whether it be through the short passing game or through Jalen Hurts running or Miles Sanders running. And the Eagles effectively mixed and matched both of those. And Matt, it's the opposite of Detroit, which didn't have weapons on the outside. That was a very sorry receiving core that the Lions threw out there against the 49ers. And they, you know, didn't have a mobile quarterback, right, in Jared Goff. That's the opposite of Jalen Hurts. So what we saw from the Lions was just, you know, trying to smash it up the middle, and it worked for a while against the 49ers until they fell well behind. If the 49ers can't stop the interior run in this game, there's a whole lot of other stuff Philadelphia can throw at the 49ers with the weapons that they have. So the 49ers are going to have to be on those P's and Q's this week.
Yeah, absolutely. And Dennis is right. Devontae Smith looks really smooth out there. It was just pitch and catch between him and the quarterback. I think they targeted him eight times, and he caught six passes for 71 yards. And yeah, it's a lot of underneath stuff, but they're moving the ball down the field. And I'm not exactly sure how you kind of stop that when you've got somebody who's so fluid like Smith is. You know, one issue for the 49ers this week is that Dre Greenlaw is dealing with a groin strain. Didn't practice on Wednesday. He seems to be moving okay, but I'm not sure that he plays. And you know, he and Fred Warner and Azeez Al-Shaair are really good at getting to the sideline, and I think that's an important thing in this game. So if Greenlaw's not there, Al-Shaair comes in, plays a lot more. Demetrius Flanagan Bowles probably plays his most extensive game. So they're really going to be asking a lot of some unheralded linebackers in that situation. And then, of course, Dallas Goedert is I don't think he's quite as good as Hockenson, but he's one of the top tight ends in the league. So I think it'll be a busy day for that group. They need a big outing from Kaywan Williams, and I think he's up for it. I mean, that's going to be, Dennis, a really, really good one. Anytime that Smith and Kaywan are matched up against each other, I think that might be one of the marquee matchups of this game.
Yeah, and if you watch Philadelphia, at least week one, there are a lot of draws and screens. And, you know, you talk about those quick passes, and a lot of them were just kind of outlet passes, you know, 3 yards down the field and then into space, and then just kind of make things happen. So the linebackers is going to be important. And Philadelphia loves to run a lot of these two tight end sets, and then just get the tight end the ball on some screens and some draws. So, you know, it's going to be, you know, up front, the pressure is going to be important, but it's got to be a disciplined rush. You can't let this guy get out the pocket because he can kill you with his legs, and he's got a good arm. But he really just wants to throw the ball short, like you said, Dave, and he wants to let his athletes make plays down the football field. So quarterback pressure, good positive pressure, not just, you know, one side pressure where you can kind of run out the other side, but just good pressure, keeping him in the pocket, not let him climb the pocket. And that interior rush is going to be important come this week. And then just the screens and draws. And that's how he built, Jalen built up his confidence in week one against the Falcons, just screens and draws, and then take your shots down the field. So it's going to be discipline on the entire defense, but that secondary has to bring their A game. Whoever's out there on the corners, they got to be ready because they're going to get tested real early.
Well, first and foremost, 49ers have to slow the run better than they did against Detroit. I talked about this on the post-game show. 49ers dodged a bullet. I mean, Detroit ran for 88 yards in the first half, and really what allowed the 49ers run defense to get out of dodge was the fact that the two-minute drill came, and that forced the Lions to pass, and that's what led to the pick six from Jared Goff to Dre Greenlaw. Then the pick six obviously gave the 49ers a big enough lead to where the Lions only ran the ball like 8 or 9 times in the second half. As I just said a few minutes ago, you don't get away with that against a better team like Philadelphia, because you're not going to back into a blowout as a defense the way that the 49ers did against Detroit, because 49ers offense is going to have to work a lot harder for some of those points and some of that big advantage early in the game. So, again, it's going to be about the details for the 49ers. I don't know if Philadelphia is a playoff-caliber team yet, but I do know they're better than the Lions. I do know that they beat the Falcons 32-6, and I do know that what Dennis said about those two tight end sets is really interesting, because it's going to put added strain on the 49ers linebackers. Whenever two tight ends or even one tight end lines up out there, the linebackers have to be ready to cover, and they also have to be ready to defend the run. And as I said, the run is such a big key, Matt. Dre Greenlaw had some bad plays last week where he was out of position. He attacked the wrong gap, ended up stacked up on Fred Warner. It allowed for a big run up the middle. We'll see if Greenlaw plays. Obviously, you talked about the groin injury, but the point is that whoever's at that linebacker spot is going to have to account for those two Philadelphia tight ends in pass coverage, but also stay faithful to the correct gap this time and clean up some of those technical issues. And that's a tough two-edged sword. That's a difficult assignment, but these linebackers are going to be really important for the 49ers on Sunday.
Yeah, Azeez Al-Shaair is going to have the game of his life, I think, in order for the 49ers to really stifle that Eagles attack. The 49ers would also be helped if Javon Kinlaw were out there. He's their biggest, certainly most physical interior defensive lineman, a guy who can really kind of hold the point and disrupt things on the inside. That would be terrific to have him pressuring Jalen Hurts up the middle. Kyle Shanahan today said something that kind of flew under the radar, but it's really, I don't want to say disturbing, but it could be prominent. He noted that Kinlaw had that injury in Dallas, I think it was week 15 last year, hurt his knee, and goes on IR, and then he had it cleaned up in the offseason. And then this is Shanahan's quote, "but it hasn't healed quite as right as we want." And we all know that Kinlaw keeps missing practice. He keeps having swelling in the knee. The fact that it was a cleanup procedure, i.e., on the scale of things, a minor procedure that didn't heal quite right, to me is alarming. And the swelling will not go away permanently. It goes down a bit, whenever he doesn't play. But as soon as he does, it's sort of like Jalen Hurd. When these guys play a lot, the knees act up and they can't keep it down for a period of time. That's a big deal. I mean, this is the guy that they want to, not replace DeForest Buckner, but certainly took his place in the starting lineup. And he hasn't played in a while. And they could really use him, Dennis, in this game against Hurt and the Eagles.
Yeah, and they could have used him last week because, like you said, he's the biggest guy on campus. And he absorbs those double teams, sometimes triple teams. And he allows those linebackers to kind of flow. And those guards and centers aren't able to get to the next level and block the linebacker. But, you know, he's a young kid. And when I hear you say they went in and cleaned up a knee, I kind of know what that means. That means they go and they get all the little floating, I forget what they used to call them, floating antibodies that are just kind of floating around in your knee. They try to clean it up, and that's supposed to help the swelling. But if they don't get it all out, you continue to get the swelling in the knee. Happened to me, but... you know, Javon is a young dude. He's got to understand that, you know, this is the opportunity. And, you know, I know it's a different athlete right now, but, you know, you got to be able to play through some of this stuff. You know, if it's, you know, 80%, you got to be able to go out there and kind of play on that because, you know, it's your time becomes real short, especially if you can't practice and, you know, if you can't play, especially. But, you know, that some of these injuries, it just seems odd to me that the 49ers have so many guys that continue to be hurt. And I know they kind of revamped their entire medical staff and their training staff, but it doesn't seem like it's working. So something else is going on, I think, that, you know, these guys just can't stay on the practice field or Sunday in football games. And it kind of blows my mind. I'm curious of why. I don't follow other teams, but it just seems like the 49ers have a lot of guys that just cannot stay healthy. And everybody we talk about, we say only if he can stay healthy. That's the thing. If he can stay healthy, he's going to be great. And these guys end up getting hurt sometime during the football season.
Well, I mean, I guess it's fitting to say it's the Achilles heel of this roster. I mean, if it is healthy, it's so talented. But we saw a disastrous turn of events in 2020 when the 49ers had more injuries than ever, really, in documented NFL history. And you're absolutely right, Dennis. I think Matt brings a great point. I didn't really hone in on that one particular Shanahan quote as closely as I should have, but he did say when he hurt his knee in Dallas last year, it was a pretty bad injury that he ended up going on IR for. He got it cleaned up, but it still hasn't healed quite as right as we want. That's about Javon Kinlaw and talking about an injury that happened almost a year ago and saying that it hasn't healed up quite as right as the 49ers want despite an operation. That makes you a little queasy, especially considering how important Javon Kinlaw is to this entire 49ers defensive operation. If you can't stop the interior run, you don't get the pass rush as much. And if you don't get the pass rush as much, then your cornerbacks, who definitely aren't the strong suit of your team, don't look as good. I mean, it is all a large domino effect, and injuries threaten the entire integrity of the operation. So it's something that we don't really have a great answer to, because part of it has been, Matt, the 49ers' propensity to draft players with some injury histories. I know Javon Kinlaw did have a knee issue coming out of college, but that's something that they tried to change this offseason, right? They really, in the draft, emphasized availability, and I think even in free agency, they emphasized availability. But it might take a couple years for the fruits of, you know, that effort to really become apparent, because they do still have a lot of these players who they seem to have drafted and acquired not paying attention or disregarding the availability aspect. They're looking for value on the field, but sometimes value on the field doesn't, you know, actually come to fruition when that player is like Kinlaw and he's spending more time, at least so far this season, on the sideline instead of on the playing field during practice.
Let's talk about that draft class, because it had a prominent week one, and you have this kind of odd phenomenon, keeping Trey Lance out of the equation for the moment, They doubled up on three different positions. They got two running backs, they got two cornerbacks, and they got two offensive linemen. And in each case, it's the second guy who was drafted, the guy who was drafted later on, who's supposed to be not as good as the guy who was drafted early, who ends up being the better player, at least early on, and at least in week one. Elijah Mitchell over Trey Sermon, Jalen Moore over Aaron Banks, and then who am I forgetting here? D'Amador Lenore over Ambry Thomas. I mean, it's very weird. It's like an upside down draft this year, and you know you can't really fault them or get on them for missing on early guys because they're hitting on some of these later guys. I mean, the fifth round looks like another genius round for them with Lenore, Moore, and Hufanga all playing prominent roles this summer. You know, Moore didn't get into the game, but he would if anybody got hurt on that line. So. It's sort of an oddball year right off the bat, and injuries have not been an issue for that class aside from Banks' shoulder injury, but that does not seem to be an issue right now. But it just kind of struck me as an oddity this offseason.
Yeah, and you talk about draft. I mean, you know, last year we saw Brandon Ayuk just have a bust-out season and haven't seen much from him this season at all, or even during camp or during the preseason. Then I saw a quote, Shanahan saying now he has to earn his time on the football field. So, you know, it's interesting because usually your high draft picks are the guys that contribute early on the football team. You know, there's not much of a learning curve. They're in there at some point early during the season and they contribute. And it just seems like last year, you know, Brandon Ayuk was a guy. I thought he was going to be an NFL superstar. And now I'm just kind of waiting to see if he's still on the team. I haven't even seen him on. I know he played last week, but, you know, no targets. I didn't, you know, hear his name. So there's someone else that I'm waiting to see how is year one to year two. And seeing the quote from Shanahan today, now it makes me worried. Is he going to be another guy that's going to be in the doghouse? And I don't understand these young kids being in the head coach's doghouse, and you're in the NFL and you're expected to play football.
The Ayuk situation is complicated because he had that hamstring in the back half of training camp, and that was mixed in around the same time as he dropped the two passes, one from Trey Lance, that was earlier in the preseason, and then the week later he dropped the third down pass from Garoppolo. That was a little high, would have been a good catch, but both times I don't think Shanahan was particularly pleased with Ayuk not holding on to it, because we do know that Shanahan seems to be extra particular about receivers. That's the position that he played. But it is worth noting that every single time that Kyle Shanahan has talked about Brandon Ayuk, he makes sure to mention the hamstring injury. Today, I counted three times he mentioned that Brandon Ayuk missed time with his hamstring injury, and that is why Shanahan always ties that in with why Ayuk has been inconsistent. And today, yes, he did have that quote that said he's got to be a lot better than the guy behind him if he wants to go out there every single play. He's referring to Trent Sherfield. But he also said, I'm happy with Ayuk. It's nothing against Ayuk. The emphasis was that Trent Sherfield has just come out of nowhere, really. And he was a great special teams player in the NFC West for the Cardinals before this. But Trent Sherfield has really impressed the 49ers at receiver. And Matt, it seems to be a bit of a perfect storm, right? It seems to be that Ayuk had the hamstring, lost maybe some rapport with the quarterbacks. Obviously, the drops didn't come at the right time in the preseason, even though there were only two of them. And Trent Sherfield, in the meantime, really surged to the point where they split reps in the game against the Lions. And I would just really encourage people to look at this as a long season kind of thing, because Ayuk is going to have presumably a chance to redevelop rapport with the quarterbacks in practice as he gets further away from the hamstring injury. He's healthy now. He's even returning punts. And when that happens, I think the 49ers expect the talent from 2020 to shine through. That being said, because they have such a good roster and Sherfield's there and he's playing well, they're not going to give Brandon Ayuk anything for free. Kyle Shanahan is more than happy to kick back and let these guys fight for it.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are worried that we've got another Dante Pettis situation on our hand with Ayuk, and I really don't think that this is a Pettis situation. I mean, Pettis, there were issues with how he operated on the field, not from lack of effort, but he wasn't great, with press coverage. He wasn't great over the middle. He had that play in the opener last year. Remember, both Ayuk and Samuel were hurt for that. So it was Kendrick Bourne and Pettis who were the starting receivers. He got one target, Pettis did, that deep ball from Garoppolo, and didn't really make an effort for it. And we didn't see much from him at all the rest of the year, and he was cut after week 7. So it's not the same situation. Ayuk's effort, I mean, he got bigger, stronger in the offseason. He's hungry. He'll go over the middle. He's going to leap for every ball that's near him, etc. I do think, though, that with Shanahan, there is a thing with second-year players. He thinks that, the second year is the important year. He thinks that he's worried that there's a tendency to coast a little bit because you're a rookie, you're always kind of fighting, you're always pushing to learn more, you realize you're behind the eight ball. Second-year players tend to get a little comfortable, and I think he's guarding against that with Brandon Ayuk. That happened to Akello Witherspoon in 2018, and that was the infamous benching game against the Packers that came back to bite the 49ers. But there was a sense that Witherspoon felt like he had made it. His hand had been stamped. And I think Shanahan is very leery of that. And you're right. There's the hamstring injury. There's this, that. Maybe he's not in the best shape because he missed so many days with the hamstring injury. But it's also clear from what Shanahan is saying is that he's pushing this guy. He's saying, there's a guy who's neck and neck with you right now in Trent Sherfield. You got to beat him and do it prominently in order to get the lion's share of the snaps next to Deebo Samuel. So I think that's all at play, but you're right. I mean, the sheer talent for Brandon Ayuk is there. It's all going to come together. Maybe not this week, though, but in the near future.
That receiving room is crazy talented. And like I said earlier, long as you can keep Jimmy Garoppolo, and here we go, keep him healthy, keep him upright. You know, this team can go deep into playoffs and end up in another Super Bowl. But again, it's the health. You know, if Brandon Ayuk can come back and be the Brandon Ayuk he was his rookie season, and you got Sherfield, we see what he can do. And Deebo, Deebo just went off against the Lions. And the running game. I mean, you can't stop this offense. And, the only way you can stop this offense if there's some type of injuries. And it seems like, that's the Achilles heel, like you said. It's funny you use that analogy, the Achilles heel, about this team. But that's what it is. If you can keep guys healthy, it's hard to stop this Shanahan offense.
Yeah, I mean, it's a balanced offense, just like the Eagles tried to run and will try to run against the 49ers. So when you have balance and you execute that balance well, good things tend to happen. And I think that's why this is going to be such a good game. I haven't even thought about who I think is going to win this game. I've been so caught up with some of the 49ers injuries and looking at the Eagles, and now I need to apply it to a prediction. Really quickly here, I'm formulating it in my head as we speak. I think the 49ers do have the better quarterback. I haven't seen enough from Jalen Hurts to really say that he's made a massive stride. That was one game. I do think that he has improved, but I also do think the 49ers will be a little bit more ready for the offense that Nick Sirianni, the new Eagles coach, is going to run with Jalen Hurts, because they do now have a game of film on it. So I do think that we'll see a nice game from the 49ers defense. Probably not a perfect one, because they are a little beaten up and they will be working in some new stuff, especially at the cornerback position. But I think that 49ers offense right now is a buzzsaw. And I think it is hard to defend. So I think we're going to see another 30-point game against a good defense, and I think the 49ers will win this game 31-24. What do you guys think?
I'm going with 30-17, and you know, a couple of names we haven't mentioned in this 45-minute podcast: Nick Bosa, D. Ford, George Kittle. I mean, those guys played really well in Week One. They're still upright and healthy, and they give the 49ers a really nice advantage. And we should note that, you know, coming out of Week 2 last year, that was that terrible game against the Jets. The 49ers were even more devastated than they are now, and they still won the next week handily against the Giants. A bad Giants team, albeit, but, you know, Raheem Mostert wasn't in that game, Kittle wasn't in that game, Garoppolo wasn't in that game, Bosa wasn't in that game. Ford wasn't in that game. My point is that it's bad right now. We're talking about injuries again, unbelievably, but it's not quite as bad as it was at this point a year ago, and they were still able to eke out some wins. So I think they'll do the same in Philadelphia.
Yeah, personally, I hate this matchup. You know, I look at this quarterback, and he just reminds me of a young Russell Wilson. And we know the trouble that the 49ers have with a mobile quarterback. And it just scares me a little bit because you don't have that interior rush that you have. You have the outside, but that interior opens up and you have a good linebacking crew, but you got a secondary that's going to be spotty. We don't even know who's going to start at the corner positions. And you have a good receiver in Devontae Smith. So it scares me a little bit. I think the offense is going to do their job. I think as far as the defense goes, there's going to be some struggles. So I'm going to go Eagles 27-24 just because I don't like this quarterback. I don't like the matchup with the 49ers defense and this mobile quarterback.
Well, it's going to be a fascinating game just because it's early in the season and we're still trying to figure out what everybody has exactly. I think the Eagles surprised some people in Week 1. The 49ers, for all intents and purposes, didn't really surprise anybody except for the last couple minutes of the game that got ugly. But I don't think that's as predictive about what this team is about as the first 57 minutes or so. But the first 57 minutes or so came against the Lions, and the Eagles are better than the Lions. So that is the question that we will see answered on Sunday. Anyway, for Dennis Brown and Matt Barrows, this is David Lombardi. We'll talk to you all next time.